Station number 14972, Richard Atkinson, Reel 2.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 2. You said it was quite some while before you got your uniform. When it did come, what did they give you?
First World War uniform. I've got photographs of me in First World War uniform. The only difference is we didn't have a cheese cutter hat, but a forage hat with four and a half. That was the only thing. There's talk about the new battle dress, but we were issued with First World War uniform, long putties and everything. An awful job learned how to put them on. And I think that's when my mother realised I was in the army.
When you came in with your uniform?
Kit bag and weapon. All First World War weapon and Dixie and Dixie cover and all lakes of that.
When did they introduce you to your rifle drills?
Straight away. I think that was the first thing that I remember. It'd been on a stand and you had to sight it up with a target and you come around and checked if you're the centre of the thing and the tip of the foresight and the U of the back sight and things like that. That was the first thing. You were lying down in a firing position and there's a fellow in front of you with a little disc looking through the hole and you were sighting up on him, things like that.
Was this the Shortley Enfield rifle that you had?
Shortley Enfield.
Were you allocated a particular rifle?
Yes, you had a rifle and had on the butt it had a washer, gold metal plate, like a ring, like a fuddle, and had a number on, that was your rifle. And that was it. You were responsible.
Where was it kept?
In the army, in the drill hall. Pulled through, and all that was kept in the butt, and that was your rifle, and you drew it when you went, and you cleaned it, and you drilled with it, and it was put back to the army when you called at night time.
How did you clean your rifle?
Well, with the pull through, and the 4x2 cloth, and the oil. The gauze or the armour's permission and stuff like that. But of course then you had to have them inspected and you licked a thumbnail and stick it in the
bolt.
You removed the bolt and stuck it, licked your finger and stuck it in to give it a bit more shine. But, all the little tricks, which they taught you, of course. But I think the rifle and the Bren gun, they had Bren guns, but nobody knew anything about them. They'll stand reading the manuals to you. We had them, but the corporal and whatnot was reading the poop to you and you were learning how to dismantle it and the four things and the gas ports and whatnot.
The webbing you said was First World War. What webbing did you get?
The ammunition pouches at the front, the big pack, the side pack, the Dixie, the water bottle on the side, the entrenching tool, the... was it, I think? Yeah. And a club bandolier of ammunition. 50 rounds.
Did you take that home with you or did you keep it in the bureau?
Yes, took everything but weapon, everything but rifle and ammunition. You didn't take that home.
You've been given a bayonet?
Yes, bayonet. So it's the rifle.
Can we examine the drills? You started by saluting, you said. Where did you move on to then in the drill system?
Well, I think it was like... Well, you moved on to, as I say, rifle drill, Bren gun drill, and that other stupid rifle, the boys' anti-tank rifle.
What was stupid about it?
It was useless. You're petrified for a start off. They said, oh, it'll go through an oak tree, but if you don't hold it right, it'll break your shoulder. It had a round, like an artillery round to look at. And everybody knew in their hearts it wouldn't stop anything, and it was a ton weight, and you're looking at round, and I don't think anybody ever fired them. I think they were thrown away at the finish, but it wasn't a popular weapon. Nobody wanted anything to do with it. The Bren, yes, if you're unlucky, you're number two, you carry ammunition in the boxes, the metal boxes, but the Bren, yes. You learn to load magazines, you have rifle magazine, you put the 10 rounds in, clean them, things like that. Bren gun, you learned that, ammunition. And then you learn drills, of course, you know, form and force, form and tools, pile and rifles, standing on things like that. But you didn't learn, we never went out on marches.
You hadn't done any marches?
No. I think we did a parade in Gateshead at Elm Road, and it was more of an inspection or something. This was just before the war. And all I remember that was the men got a pint and a pie, and we, because when we were recruits, got a glass of milk or something. But, you know, it was just one of these inspection parades of some sort. I don't know whether some dignity coming or what, I don't know, but it was just one of those things where we'll end up in Gateshead in Elmfield Grove behind the drill hole. Ben Burt tells us.
Who was the commanding officer of your company?
Kelly. Now, I remember him swearing his end. My officer was a fellow called Stanley Cunningham from Hexham. And with Kelly, was it last year? My wife and I. Oh, yes, so we'd been down to the son's wedding. My son's second wedding. And we're in King's Cross waiting. It was late on. And I was in my DLI blazer. I'd been down to the wedding or not. And we're sitting waiting for the train. I think it was around about 11 o'clock was leaving. And this fellow walked past me and he looked and he says to his wife, there's one. And I never bothered. You know, that happens with the DLI badge. You eat it all over the whole world. And as I was walking down towards the train, he says to me, can I have a word with you? I said, yes. He says, what battalion? I says, oh, I says, it's the 9th. He says, did you know my father? Oh, I says, I don't know you. I says, he says, well, I'm Captain Kelly. He says, my father was Captain Kelly. Oh, what says he was the man who swore me in? You know, the name brought it back. Remember him at all. And when I've talked to the Madisons and MSK, he says, oh, Kelly, he has the packing case business and the training estate at Gateshead. And he was my officer, his father.
What was he like as an officer, commanding officer?
Well, he didn't have much to do with them. My platoon officer, he'd come and he'd inspect you. He lined up and inspected drill, and he'd go away, you wouldn't see him anymore that night. He was a smashing fella, great bloke, my officer, but you never saw them until when war came along, and then you see, because they're addressed, the second lieutenant was addressed as Mr. Cunningham in those days, and the only sir, when he spoke to you, because you weren't allowed to speak to him. But Kelly, I can remember him swearing his name, and see, all the officers in those days, there was the Ridley, he was a big man for the Clark Chapman. They're all pretty wealthy people, was officers in those days. And they were their own clique, they didn't. All you sort of had contact with was your corporal.
Do you recall your NCOs?
Yes, Billy Bell, died not so long ago. He was my corporal, Lance Corporal and Corporal.
What was he like?
Well, he. How do you describe him? He was a fussbot, you know, a little know-all. I can't put it on any other way. He puffed up with his own. He knew he had that little authority over you, and he let you know it. But we didn't have that much connections with them there. Put you through your paces and sort of walked away from you.
What platoon were you in?
13th platoon. And I was in 13th platoon. I'm carrying out a 13. I have a 13. 13 to me has been a very, very lucky number. And through 13th platoon, and I joined on the 13th, and things like that, and I've always hankered to 13. I have it.
Do you recall other recruits with you in that 13th platoon?
Yes, there was a fellow called Stafford. He used to make violins. There was a fella called Adger. There was a fella called Tweddle. He used to sell ice cream for Dominic Reyes. What to call the other fella? Purvis. Proctor. Those are the sort that got sworn in.
And had they basically got the same reason for joining?
Yes, I think it was just summer's night and it looked good and... what's the odds, you know, so I think I don't think there's any patriotism in it. I don't think it entered your mind. It just soldiers that looked good. Of course, soldiers wasn't very highly respected in those days. I mean, you know, if your daughter went out with a soldier, she wasn't very good. But it just sort of appealed to us. I think just followed the band and joined.
The popular opinion which you've touched upon there, was it that basically that you played a soldier, you were weekend soldiers or what have you, they didn't take you seriously?
No, I don't think we realised what we had done, to be honest. You know, I think if you had thought, you may not have done it. You see, I mean, when I joined, and the fellow next door to me, when he found out, he was a detective constable for phone. Constabulary then is, and the first thing he says to me, my bloody bayonet pusher. You know, that's what the thought of the army. But I think if you had thought, but it was just young lads, no money on a spur of the moment. Never regretted it, never rued it.
Within the life of your small unit, were the bullies amongst
no,
you?
No. I never saw any cases of that. No. Helpful, pleasant. You know, one fella had been in the RAs or something, and he didn't tell them when you got a court, because you're supposed to declare if you've been in another regiment. And he had done his time with them, whatever it was, and he used to sort of keep me, oh, Dick, we do so and so and so and so, you know. It was that sort of atmosphere. No, I wouldn't say it was any bullying or.
No initiations that you hear about.
Yeah, hear these sergeant majors shouting, I'm standing here and there's no initiations and none of that. Rig would tell you, like, I think you better smarten your hair up and things like that. But and when you think, as regards the army, it was in a nice sort of way. He wasn't a very, very popular man. He wasn't liked at all. But as I say, I found that he did things in a different way, in the, you know, for the good of the Dumps.
So up to the eve of the war, you'd done your early training and some rifle and Bren gun work. Would that cover it basically up to the eve of the war itself?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So you weren't prepared as a soldier, you would say?
Oh, no. Anything but a soldier. We were anything but soldiers. You couldn't. I mean, they did a demonstration once. Oh, that was the thing we were against, where we had to go on this parade. There were some recruits from, it must be from Brandsbeth or somewhere, regular soldiers, and they were showing us how it was done. And there were 7 week soldiers, and they were soldiers, you know, the regulars, and that was a regimental pace, and the drill movements, and all that, you know, and we weren't a patch on them, you know. It was laughable what we were to them for their 7 weeks and our 4 or 5 months, whatever it was. But we had the basics, but see, like you said, everything. I see we've still learned to put long putties on.
When war was declared that day, what do you recall happened to you then?
Well, I was at work, and I worked for this building firm on the site. My mother was a private building, my mother was buying a house. And I said, we only had half an hour for dinner, and I come in for my dinner, and my mother says to me, she says, it's announced on the paper they're calling up announced on the radio they're calling up the territorials. Well, I said, I'm not going back. So I just went round the officer. I says, look, I call the terriers up from a territorial. I'll be back for you money tonight. So I went home, I had a bath, put my uniform on, and I was ready when the couple come to the door with papers. When the policeman came to the door, and he says, as you're calling up papers, I was all ready to go to the door.
What were your feelings? Because now you were going into an entirely different situation. How did you feel? You must have had some thoughts about what might happen or what the future might hold for you.
It was unknown. It was an adventure, to be honest. It was unknown. We didn't know what to expect. Actually, your mind was a blank, to be honest. It never entered your mind. They just say, oh, I'm free, you know. No more work. Things like that. I'm a man.
Did you become a paid soldier from the date the war started? Yeah. Was that the first day in which you...
I remember I went in the drill hall, because we had moved away about a mile from the drill hall by this time. We went down, reported. Everybody had to report by 6 o'clock. Went in, reported, with all your kit and everything. And the first things they said to me, I can remember, plain as anything, Rig,
Atkinson?
Yeah, now no longer a territorial. And on your shoulder in those days you wore a T, territorial. He says, you're now no longer a territorial soldier. Take that T down and that territorial brass off your shoulder evidence. You're now a regular soldier. First words to you. Which he did. Threw them away in a pity which now, in these days, wish you had kept. Well, you had a territorial lapel badge, TA, and they took that off you. They said, yeah, that's finished with you. No territorial army, you're all regulars.
What happened to you that day? You've gone to the drill, you reported, hole. What happened?
Well, sitting around the drill hall, and they brought a doctor in. She was a woman. She was a police doctor from Felling. After she finished her surgery, she came up and put us all through a medical. You know, proper medical. Cough and bend down and all that. Got a proper medical. Molly Miller, that was her name. Dr. Molly Miller, woman doctor. And she'd give you a proper medical. And then the next day...
Did you go home that night?
No. The bed was down in the drill hall. And the next day they took this, what we call your unemployment hut, over. And it was at the bottom of our garden. And they moved us in there. Well, that was a Saturday afternoon, because the Friday night were called up. The Saturday afternoon, we were moved into the end, sort of bedded down that. And on the Sunday morning, they assembled us all on the courts in the area. And my mother looked out the garden, I was just standing next to us. She says, I thought you were away at the war. But then they went down to church parade on the Sunday morning. And just as we were coming to the church, the sirens went and...
The announcement of the war was made that morning.
And I found High Street is like claiming sale of Everest, and they wanted to double us up the High Street. You couldn't walk up, double up. Anyway, that was the war was announced at 11 o'clock, just as we're coming to church.
Were you still in your First World War uniforms?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
How long did you have those?
Well, First World War uniform, we had them. We went to... did all my training there, you know. Then you learn to march and run and double and salute and properly. We went to Whitburn, we fired a course, and then that night they put us on buses and brought us to the central station at the loading dock and on trains, and we went down south, and the Durhams never came north again. We went down to Longcompton, Morton Marsh, that place.
Was this by train?
Train. Special trains took us down there.
So you'd done an initial...
And we were still in First World War uniforms then. And that... We got inspected by the King in Chipping Norton, George the VI would have been. And they give us, some of us, battle dress. And I had a... camp badge, and I was at the front rank, and I can remember him walking past me, and I can see him to his aide camp, or the general, whoever it was with him. This division's all ready. He says, yes sir, this division's fully equipped, we're ready for fighting now. We weren't. But I just issued his battle dress. And it wasn't complete, you know, it was coming in, and we were getting it.
So initially you had a few days or weeks in which you were doing your training in Felling itself.
Yes.
And sleeping in the...
drill hall, in this unemployed hut.
What were you on? The floor?
On the floor, yes, on the floor. And some were sleeping on the piano and the stage. And just on the floor on your palliasse thing. Oh, there's no... I never had a bed in the army yet. Never. Only in the hospital or something like that.
You said you fired at Whitburn. How did you get there?
They took us down by... Must be army lorries. Must have been. Because, no, we didn't go on buses. Well, they didn't have sufficient buses. There's no trains wouldn't get there. Must have been army lorries.
Do you recall what kind of shooting you'd be doing on the range?
Yeah, you're doing like the 200 yards, 600 yards, and there was target shooting. There was shooting for money, you know, like a pool where you put so much money in and the shots go. And that was your efficiency test, actually. They're grading you. We didn't know it at the time, but they're grading you for different things. But and then learned to boil your rifles out and things like that. You know, we'd never seen anything like that. And we're, you're boiling water skull and the barrels out and things like that. And you, when the huts would burn for 2 or 3 days, and then, as I say, just lorries them back to the central and away. Special troop trains.
Do you remember the date that you would get down to the Cotswold area?
Well, it must have been about the November. Oh, well, we're there in November because it sticks in my mind. On the television, Tuesday, was it? There's a programme on. It was Morton Marsh. And I cocked my ears up. It was a big day out. And he was talking. And he mentioned Loncompton. And I says to John, I says, oh, there's a church we had our first November 11th service in. I says, and Jakey Kane, the CEO's bugler, blew the last post in the Rivalian air. And it was beautiful. It still stands in my memory to this day. It sounded, he was a rag and bone man, but he was a CEO's bugler. And he was fantastic. Jakey Kane, a little villain. He nooked you, his knee was nooked you. But he's a smashing bugler. And he was all right, I mean, unless you had a drink or something. And that, so it must have been November, before November we were there. Just before November, because we left in just end of December for France.
When you got down there, how did the local people receive you?
Well, not bad. They just put us in barns. We're just 30 platoons in a barn, and I'd just taken out, it was apple country for cider, and the barns was, well, you're intoxicated, you're sleeping them, you know. The smell had been for apples for years and years, and we're in these barns, and the people. Oh yes, it was just a long camp. It was just a little village, one street and a church and things like that. Very nice. There was no shops, anything.
Was it comfortable in the barns?
It was rough and ready, same as the drill halls. Not you just on the floor and what?
Is that on the floor itself, or did you have some kind of polyester to drink on?
Yeah, the polyester and a couple of blankets, and that was it. No. You didn't feel it because you're young.
Where did you keep your equipment and your weapons?
Beside you.
Was there any fear of stealing from people stealing from it?
Well, yeah, you are warned, if you lost anything, steal it back. But don't get caught. But, you lose a button stick or your cap badge. You used to take out your hat and put it in your pocket. You never left your hat down with your hat badge in, because, you know, still today they still steal them. But little things they got, but there's no, I wouldn't say there's any stealing there. Somebody who's short of a pair of laces for a kit inspection or steal somebody else's thing they got.
What happened if you did lose a piece of equipment?
Well, you had to pay for it for the start off. You had to go to quartermaster and the quarter inquiry as to why you lost it, and you're a villain, you would probably got fined. I think you get somebody got a fine and you had to pay for your kit. So therefore, if you lost your spoon, you stole somebody else's.
So you were in barns, sleeping on palliasses on the floor. What was the situation with regard to food? How did they feed you?
Well, you had your company cooks, but there were only people that was in the regiment who had said, oh, yes, you can be cook, or you'll be cook, or something like that. And I wouldn't say they were good cooks, but the stuff must have been eatable, because we're thriving, we're put weight on. We're all weaklings when we went in, and we're put weight on, so it must have been. Didn't seem very appetizing at the time, but... Because you see, you only having dicks, you know, mess tins, and you know, and you want the best of things to eat out of, and everything was in one, the tea and the same as the sweet and things like that.
Do you remember what kind of food you were getting?
Well, I can remember spud bashing and things like that. Just the basics, spuds, veg, lump of meat.
Ablutions, washing and cleaning, so where did that happen?
It's just cold water and benches with bowls.
That include shaving?
Everything. Well, I didn't shave for years and years. But I've seen the fellas stand shaving cold water in the morning, you know, you had to be shaved every day. And yes, it was all just cold water.
Latrines, and how was that covered?
They were just dug, you know, those were dug somewhere, trench or whatever it was. Because everything was crude and empty. It was still 1914-18 mentality with the officers and everything. And, you know, we're still living in those days, to be honest. It was only when we got in the desert we started getting organised proper with latrine attendants and proper thunder boxes and that. But in those days it was no particular, I mean, for disease, you know, they were strict in that line with Lyme and stuff, but it was still 1418 mentality.
Was your health good through all this?
I always suffered from the sore throat and loud tonsils. And I could report sick with it, but you only got a number 9, so you didn't bother. You knew you couldn't get away with anything. You couldn't flatten them because they wouldn't tolerate it. There's no way they would let you. So you used that as an excuse of a route march come up. You'd report sick with a sore throat and maybe he's got excused. You couldn't get away with anything. If you went on sick period, you missed your breakfast because you had to report sick before breakfast. So therefore, there's stacks of incentives not to be sick.
What was the number 9?
It was a pill for everything. Cured everything. Flat foot, bad head, earache. And number 9 was the understood thing. That's all you got. Number 9, return to duty. You only saw the medical only anyway. You never saw the doctor. Very rare occasion you were ill when you saw him, but it was only a medical orderly, and he looked at you, you're all right, Dick. You're number 9.
What time did your day start?
Well, Rivali was always 6:30. Rivali 6:30, and I think they're supposed to do PT, but you didn't, and you had to sort of get ready because breakfast was a parade, and you paraded for breakfast. But if you, like, see. I was one of the biggest offenders. I used to skip breakfast, miss a parade, and somebody bring a cup of tea, a mug of tea, or a ditch of tea, but I never drink a tea. And I still do it this day. I only have a cup of tea for breakfast now. Miss the parade. Because, you're just filling for breakfast, march up the cookhouse or wherever it was, and got your breakfast and march back.
There's no roll call at the parade.
Oh, no roll call, but it was a parade, you see. Well, if you didn't go on parade, you didn't get no breakfast. So, you'd have an extra 10 minutes in bed and do your breakfast.
What would follow breakfast?
Well, I think you had your breakfast was around about 8. You had till 9, and your first parade was at 9, and that was on standing orders. The job was, what the dress was, what the day was, whether it was route march or field thing, or whatever it was on orders, and that was a drill. Could be rifle drill, it could be anything you see, but detailed from there. But in the meantime, you see, in the first place, I was young, and the Dunns was well over the number of men, and they weeded them out. They were sent all the 9th was going to the 12th Battalion, thanks to Scottish. And I was down to go, and I saw Reagan, I said, hey, I joined with the lads, and he pulled strings and he kept us with them because I was underage. And so, and then when we got to Little Compton, that he says to me, Atkinson, he says, if you use your loaf, he says, be 13th platoon, we're getting trucks by this time, you'll be 13th platoon truck driver, he says, it'll save you a lot of marks and stuff. See, and he's an awful man, he's a proper regular stick ramrod and all that, but he could do these sort of things. And so I went in the transport section. And then you learn tricks of the trade from there. If you get that and get that, you never do that. You start to get the regular tricks, what to do and what not to do. You learn to be army men, let's put it that way.
Can we just examine the very early days in Little Compton?
Long Compton.
Long Compton. You'd have your breakfast, you'd then be doing whatever was on the orders that you had to do. Mm-hmm. What time would lunch be?
12-ish. 9 o'clock was your first parade till 12, but you got a break in between, a nappy break, a 10 minutes teen ward.
Was there a nappy canteen?
Yes, there was always something like that. You had to buy it, mind. A cup of tea with penny and a penny bun, which in 1913 didn't have your 3 or 4 year pool for a cup of tea. But there was always, you went in there for a smoke. Stop. If you're having lectures, you would stop members for a smoke. You see, you can smoke now, gentlemen. But there's always a break in between time. Maybe 10 minutes, go over now, but it was a break. And 12 o'clock, or around thereabouts, I couldn't say for example, was lunch, dinner.
And this would be the main meal of the day, would it?
Be the middle of the day.
And then what would you likely be getting at that main meal?
Well, you'd be getting spuds, veg, and sweet sputty dick or something like that. The normal meal with beans, peas, or whatever it was.
Was it again a parade? You marched to
yes,
it?
Yes, oh yes. You must be the Dixies and everything.
Were these various breaks done by bugle?
No, no. The only if there's any ceremony attached to it. No, the companies had their own bugler, but they didn't. It wasn't. The bugler was usually at the office, you know, and he blew for order sergeant or whatever it was. You learned all the calls, mind. You had no, you know, letter calling on. Yeah, you learned the calls, but you didn't do much for the bugle, really.
After lunch, what might you be doing?
Well, you'd have your lunch and you'd settle down. You know, you had quite a fair break, maybe an hour and a half or something like that. And then you go back and parade, whatever's to be done. It could be bath parade. It could be a football match. There's always something. You know, in the parade. Then at tea time, you're finished. That is the finish, unless you're on guard duty or fire picket or whatever.
What time would that be?
That was on about four-ish, you know.